Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Hubler and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, and I'm joined by the coach every week, Coach K, Ken Schultheis. Coach, Easter weekend, beautiful weather, family coming in town, a big week, not only in sports, but in the lives of Coach K and Joe.
Well, Joe, all I can say is we are back, on another Friday, ready to go. The Miami Hurricane, your daughter has landed, I assume, in Jasper, and my kids will be here in Evansville in the next couple hours. So, yeah, it's an exciting time, but what's most important is that here we are on a Good Friday. And let's not forget what Good Friday is all about, folks, wherever you're at in the world. And that is our Savior Jesus Christ accepted our sins and took them to the cross this week. We celebrate him taking them to the cross and giving us a chance through his death for us to live forever. And let's move forward, Joe. What about the hurricane from Miami? How she got in okay and everything's okay at the Milligan household?
Yeah, she got actually in on Thursday, but she had some friends graduating from Marshall here within a month, and she felt like it was her only chance to go see them, so she ran over there real fast. Came home last night, went to a 4:30 Dubois Pike Invitational track meet. As soon as it was over, we ran out and watched the Jasper Middle School track meet. So she's been on the run since she's been home, but she's now asleep, and God knows when she'll wake up. But I do want to point out, I do want to brag, the Dubois Pike Invitational last night, Jasper did win it first time in many, many moons. I don't even know how many years, because I asked that a couple times and no one could tell me, but finally they pulled it off and then ran out to the Jasper Middle School track and watched Reese Milligan have a nice night. Rafe Milligan had a nice night earlier in the week, but has major shin splints. Coach, have you ever had shin splints? I never have, but watching him, they look painful.
I did have shin splints, and it curtailed my approach to track one year. I was going to run track. I was going to try to be an 880-er. Back then it was the 880, and shin splints hit me, and I guess that was my way out. That was my way out of track.
I've never had him. You know, he won the 400 the other night, but every step hurt me. I'm sure it hurt him more, but I could just tell that things weren't right. So I've told him, you know, we're going to Dr. Eby for some treatments with great trainer Rodney Crawford, and he told him that we're just going to take it easy for a while.
Well, it always hurts the parents more, and especially, folks, listeners, it hurts our Joe of the Coach K and Joe Show, because he lives his life through his kids' sports.
Yes, I do. I love it.
He's so good, and because he it makes him feel good. So, but no, it's all good, folks. And you know, the fun thing about having kids, and it doesn't matter whether it's sports or it's Spell Bowl or it's their art projects or the band or the group, singing group or instrumental group they're starting, all those things. It's great to see your kids creatively, what I call creatively involved, whether it's sports or art or whatever we're talking about. There is a creativity part to it, whether they're creating their own computer game. Support them, applaud them, let those creative juices, whether they're physical, mental, emotional, keep going, and they'll end up much better than Coach K and Joe. And folks, that's probably a good thing. So, Joe, let's jump into some sports, what we've got going on. Folks, I am happy to say, and if you're from the Midwest, there's a chance you might be an Indianapolis Pacers fan, and you may be somewhere in the world, somewhere on this wonderful earth that God created, with the work of the internet, we're talking with people or talking to people, so on the Coach K and Joe Show, all over the earth via the internet, and that's an exciting prospect in itself. So the Pacers, who were on a downslide of epic proportions, whether you were listening to the mother station at ESPN and all the different shows that, you know, they could get 15 to 20 good minutes every 2 hours out of talking about the Pacers. So, but Frank Vogel and the group have kind of rallied the troops. They won a couple games down the stretch after the loss to the Miami Heat. Joe, I think they beat Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City, which was a big win. They finished off Orlando the other night, and they basically come out of it with the number one seed.
I guess my question is, you know, Miami, apparently when they got beat, who did they get beat by? It was someone who I never in my wildest dreams thought they could beat by. But come to find out that they just decided to rest their people. Is the number one seed not worth having them play that game, the possibility, or did they just concede? Because I guess if the Pacers won both the games, which they did, the Pacers get the tiebreaker anyways. But, you know, you don't know that yet. And are they just conceding, saying, let's rest our players, or are they that cocky, thinking it doesn't matter if we have to play at their place, we'll be fine?
Joe, I will give them a pass on that. I'll tell you why. The people that went to the game to see those guys play were probably from a standpoint of coaching and looking at the playoffs themselves. You know, they so often, Joe, that emotionally and mentally, they know what they need to do. I truly believe that. And I know it comes down to the integrity of the game, character, what are you teaching people out there as role models, not to give their best at all times. No, sometimes I think you have to look down the road. And the ultimate goal of the Miami Heat, year in and year out, Joe, is to win the NBA championship. They have the people in place. And you have to think about what they've been going through. Dwayne Wade is not even close to 90%, much less 100%. Wear and tear on Bosch, wear and tear on these other guys. In my opinion, whether they are the number one or number two seed is not that important for the Miami Heat. It's nice, but I don't think the way the playoff format is set up, it's that much of a benefit for a team like the Miami Heat, whether they're one or two. The Pacers, maybe a little different story, and I'll tell you why. My feeling on the Pacers is that from a mental aspect, here's a team that had been riding high and solid for two-thirds of the season, and they were, you know, everybody just said, hey, these guys are going to end up the number one seed. They ended up being that. And I give Frank Vogel credit. I give the guys credit. They got it together, and they got it done down the stretch. But I think this game with the Miami Heat in Miami, I think whether they play in Miami, whether they play in Indiana, I think Miami knows that they have the pieces it takes to win. On the other hand, Indiana was fragile. And securing this number one seed, I think, did a lot for them mentally and emotionally, and I think that it will help propel them. But here's what Pacer fans aren't going to like, what I've got to say on this. I think getting the number one seed was great, but I don't think the ills of the Pacers have been settled. I still think they are struggling, not just offense. I know right now some people are saying, oh, Coach K, you're brilliant. Yeah, well, the Pacers have struggled offensively all year. Hold on here, folks, before you get on my case. Hold on here. I think they struggle even more because they quit moving the basketball. Now, I did see them against Oklahoma City, and I did see a little bit against the Orlando Magic where they moved that ball a little bit better, broke down the defense, and used the dribble to create an opportunity to score. folks, watch basketball. When guys are out there just dribbling through their legs, behind their back, going east to west instead of north and south, they're not using the dribble to score. So I still think the Pacers are very fragile offensively, and I think that puts them in a tough situation, whether they're the 1 seed, 2 seed, 3 seed, whatever seed. And I think Miami feels like we have the experience and the understanding of what needs to be done as well as the talent. But, Joe, let me ask you this. The move by Bird to get Bynum is maybe paying off that no one else got him, but the Pacers don't get him either. He's out for the first round of the playoffs, still battling with a sore knee. I know the Pacers only gave up $1 million for him, but what are your thoughts on Bynum? Now we don't even know if we're going to have him in the playoffs at all. Frank Vogel's saying we will, but he's not going to be available for the first round.
Well, you know, when I was preparing for today's shows and our best of interviews, I was listening to Bobby Slick Leonard, and you had asked him if he thought that the Pacers should make any changes and any moves, and he said no. And I guess there's a reason why he is the Hall of Fame coach that he is. In retrospect, he's probably exactly right. I think Ranger right now would be the best way to do, you know, to have done that. And you know, not paying off right now. Those moves didn't.
Well, very astute to bring that point up, and we, just so our listeners understand, we're going to be rebroadcasting a little bit later in the show a best-of interview with Bobby Slick Leonard, Boom Baby, the Pacers Hall of Famer as a coach, great Indiana basketball player both in high school and college, and he did comment about his thoughts on the Pacers, and of course he won some ABA championships and really is the reason NBA basketball is in Indianapolis. So it was perfect timing to bring that on as the Pacers enter the playoffs. So we're going to see what happens, folks. Granger gone. He was not a player on the floor that the Pacers could look to, but he absolutely must have had tremendous leadership off the court. I don't know if PG is gonna find his stroke again and find the play that he had earlier. Hibbert has just been struggling up and down the floor. So this Atlanta Hawks series is going to be pretty interesting. If you remember a couple weeks back, I think it was, I'm not sure of the date, I can be correct, I think the Hawks beat the Pacers, and it wasn't pretty. So this will be interesting. Game one takes place, I believe, tomorrow. Looking for tickets, and there are still tickets available. But good luck to the Pacers, because I'm a Pacer fan, folks. I don't like where this team is at on both ends of the court, because one end of the court needs to be tremendous for them, and that's the defensive end, and the offensive end has to be at least where it can move the basketball, break the defensive the team down defensively, because they're not going to score lots of points just by virtue of some of their offensive ability. Evan Turner, we hope, will get himself into play the way he needs to, and these guys will hit on all cylinders. But we're going to be talking Pacers, hopefully, for the next few weeks. Joe, I did want to bring up, no, Tiger Woods was not in the Masters. No, Phil Mickelson was not in the Masters. Lefty wasn't there. Ratings were down. Everybody loves to talk about how the ratings were down. But I think it's a great story. Bubba Watson, also a lefty, won the Masters a couple years ago. He's unorthodox. He's different than most all the players out there. Left-hander comes in and wins his second Masters, talks about just how much it means to him. He almost got me emotional because of how he looks at it. And he still, you know, he doesn't come out like a corporate superstar athlete does today and talk about how, well, you know, this is what I do and I prepare myself for this opportunity. And no, he talked about how fortunate he was to be in that position, how to be able to walk up and get another green jacket so soon after the birth of his kid, after he changed how he trained, how he and his wife changed the way professional life, their personal life, to incorporate him being a dad. And we've all had to do that. We've all had to do that. And it was just great to see how he still looked like the kid in the candy store, the player after winning the sectional in high school or a state championship in high school, the kid finding out he made the team or the starting five. It still means that much to him inside. And you know what? I think it means that much to all these guys. But I think their agents, their corporate sponsorships, all those things make them have to come out and try to be Wall Street-like. You know what I mean, Joe? Wall Street, business-like, preparation, this is what happens. But no, Bubba Watson loved it, Joe. He loved it.
Well, it's good to see someone that's willing to talk like that, because as you're right, most of them are like, oh, I expected this, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it meant something to him, and getting a little emotional. I like that kind of stuff. I think that, you know, it just shows just truly, you know, anyone that sees someone do something like that and doesn't become a big fan of that person, I don't know. You just aren't a sports fan. I mean, you've got to love it. It's got to give you goosebumps. You know, as you said, it got you emotional. You know, if you're a true sports fan, that's what's going to happen.
Well, sports is like nothing else, and we can say that about anything we've done. I've been in the business world. I've been in sports, education, various things, corporate level, the lower levels with kids and youth sports. It's just different. And sometimes maybe you shouldn't be like the Wall Street group, because we know where that can take you. Sometimes it's great to hold on to the emotion and the excitement and the purity of what you do. And to hear Bubba talk about that, I thought that was great. And no, I like the Masters better when Tiger's in it too, guys. Because I like him or I don't like him, doesn't matter. I like it when Phil Mickelson's in there, because there's something about Phil. He's not athlete. He's just Phil playing golf. Some people say, well, you know, he's not what he portrays himself. I think Phil is Phil. I think he's got his own personality. He's a family guy. He goes to play golf. He's not looking at it at the social scene. He's just Phil, and I like it. I like when him is. But it's okay for Bubba. It's okay for these other guys to get up there and have a chance to be at the top and find out who they are, and that, yeah, they're everyday guys too. Folks, we're going to go to our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the NCAA and President Mark Emmert. He was on the Mike and Mike show this morning. I found some of his comments interesting. We'll also maybe have a mailbag question or two before we go to a couple of best-of interviews with Bobby Slick Leonard being one of them, and talking about the Pacers and his time in pro and college basketball and what he meant to the state of Indiana professionally. But we're going to go to break. You're on the Good Friday edition of the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Chevy Cadillac, Toyota Scion in Jasper. We've all heard the commercial, 15 minutes could save you 15. Folks, let me tell you, it won't take 15 minutes for us to save you money. Give Ubelar's a call at 1-800-937-USA1 or visit us online at ubelar.com. We'll tell you the facts, treat you right, no bait and switch, and best of all, we will save you money. Ubelar Chevy Cadillac, Toyota Scion in Jasper, where customers send their friends for a lifetime of savings in 15 minutes or less since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
It's not the U.S. Postal mailbag. It's not the Joe mailbag. It's the Coach K mailbag.
New York and New Jersey love Coach K. Go Hoosiers! Coach K speaks the truth! Woo!
Now here's Coach K and Joe with this week's Coach K's mailbag.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and it's time once again for the Coach K mailbag. It's not the Joe mailbag. If you have a question for me, I don't speak the truth. I speak whatever I want and whatever makes me look good. So if you want the truth, you got to go to the Coach K. First of all, comment from indie contributor Don Schulteis. He says for you to stop ripping Wall Street.
Well, I'm not ripping them. I'm just questioning them. But Don, I'll pull back a little bit. And if we can bring in one of the big bank or big Wall Street brokers as a sponsor of the show, I'm sure that at least you'll change your tune, Joe, and you'll do whatever you have to do. So, I got to call a spade, a cheat, an honest, whatever. And we know sometimes they lead. I know that they make the economic world go forward, and I know that one of our supporters and financial advisors, Janet Schulteis with Edward Jones, they do it the right way. So, okay, Don, I got it. I'll go with you. Joe, we also have a text from listener Nicole Cyril. She's in Tuscaloosa right now, and she sent me a picture. She's standing in Alabama's football stadium down there for work, and it was a great picture of that stadium, the City of Champions, she called it, down in Tuscaloosa. So what do we got in the mailbag, Joe?
Okay, first one's from Ken from Evanston, Illinois. He says, Coach K, do you follow NHL, and who do you favor in the playoffs?
Yeah, I tell you what, NHL playoffs are going on. And if you're asking me if I follow the NHL, no, I do not that closely. But as the playoffs continue on, I do keep track of them and kind of watch what's going on, who's playing who, who's advancing. I know that on Thursday, the Rangers beat Philadelphia and New York's leading the series. I know that. I know that Montreal beat Tampa Bay in four OTs on Wednesday. I know that. But who's the best? I don't know. Joe, who do you think's the best, and who's going to win hockey Stanley Cup?
Well, you know who I am. I'm a homer. Whoever I'm for, that's who I think's going to win it. You know, but I just think the Bengals are Super Bowl champions at the beginning of every football season. But, you know, we grew up in La Porte, and I did grow up around a bunch of Milligan Blackhawk fans, but I am a Pittsburgh Penguin fan, so I'm going with the Pittsburgh Penguins, too. And I know Ken, the one person who asked this question, is a big Homer Blackhawk fan. So I am going with
really?
The Penguins. Yes.
Well, I think your Penguin pick is probably a pretty good pick. I know that historically, if you're a Blackhawk fan, you're a Blackhawk fan. But you know what? Cub fans are Cub fans, and we know where the Cubs are at. So I don't know. I know that Boston's good this year, Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh, the Rangers, Philadelphia Flyers are good, Colorado, St. Louis, Chicago's right. You know, there are a lot of good teams this year in hockey, but I think your Pittsburgh pick's probably as strong as anybody.
Yes, it is. Next question.
Yeah.
Kevin in Indianapolis, A.J. Hammonds said he's coming back to play for Purdue next season. Seeing how he was projected as a second-round pick, do you think he should have went just on potential and possibly played overseas? Or do you think another year of college ball will help him?
This is a great question because I happen to like the potential of A.J. Hammonds. I don't like how he plays right now. I think each year, though, he's gotten better. Kevin, so what I would say is, in his situation, and maybe some Purdue fans aren't happy about him staying, but in his situation, I think it was to his best interest to come back. I think his upside with another year could vault him into a first-round draft choice. He's big. He's strong. He's got good footwork. Problem with A.J. Hammons is he off during the game. He has periods where he disappears. Some of that, and Joe, you may agree with me or not, and Tom Dienert might agree with me or not from the Big Ten Network, some of that has to do with Purdue's offense, at least the guards that were on the floor. They didn't keep him involved in the offense. And you know, when you're a big man, you have to rely on your perimeter players to get you the basketball, because you need to be moving, cutting, screening, and flashing. And I'll tell you what, Joe, Purdue didn't get him the basketball on a consistent basis. I'm not talking every time down the floor, but on a consistent basis where they kept him involved in play. Now, is there an excuse for him to take it off? No, there's probably not. Your thoughts, Joe?
Well, you know, now that you hear Ronnie Johnson's comments about how he didn't like playing for a game that everything's going to go through center, you know, you got someone out there that's supposed to be doing it, and he's disagreeing with it, and, you know, that kind of tells you the tale of that. But I'm hoping, since he got evaluation from the NBA and, you know, low second round, that maybe he'll want to advance that stock, and how is he going to better it? He's going to better it with his play, but he's also going to better it with not taking plays off, not disappearing for 5 minutes, 10 minutes at a time. But I'm wondering, you know, you just with the dynamic of Ronnie Johnson, Mr. Selfish, wants to be the point guard but wants to be the man and shoot wild one-hand floaters in the lane. As you can tell, I'm not a Ronnie Johnson fan, and I wasn't when he played at Purdue. I was happy. I was ecstatic the day he left, because with Bryson Scott, you know, sophomore who's not quite your typical point guard, but they got a kid out of Indianapolis, P.J. Thompson, and he is a true point guard. I'd rather play with a true freshman point guard that'll play as a point guard than someone like Ronnie Johnson, someone that selfish. Ronnie, we'd love to have you on sometime, because I'd love to debate you on your selfishness.
Well, Purdue does have a good class, recruiting class coming in. I think some people have ranked them number 22 in the nation. Others have them at least fourth in the Big Ten. They have some good guards coming in. Here's the big thing, Joe, and I think you hit it on the head. Taking plays off, as we both talked about, you know, talent doesn't matter if you don't have the heart, the mental toughness to play at a high level all the time. You know, some people call it urgency. Others call it keeping a high motor, whatever you want to call it. I've had players that look really good for spurts in practice, in games, and some people see them and they say, well, why didn't he play more? He really looked good in the 5 minutes he was out. But they don't see the other 20 and 30 minutes. And it's because they don't put forth the effort they need. And I don't want to spend the rest of our time before our best of interviews talking about A.J., but if he can find a way to find the mental toughness and the heart to play, not half the game, the whole game, we're talking about a number one, or not number one, but a first-round draft choice in the NBA. It's going to be tough to do, Joe, but if he just improves by 50% and they truly do run the offense through the post, in and then out, Purdue's going to be a much better team. They're just going to be a much better team.
Okay, and now I've got Jim from Jasper. He says, boom, baby. We've talked about Indiana. We've talked about Miami. Who do you feel like will come out of the Western Conference to take on the champion of the East?
You know, a year ago, Joe, I would have said Oklahoma City. Now, and the reason being that Westbrook would be back. But here's my problem with Oklahoma City. I think that in their and I still don't understand why they traded Hardman to the Houston. Other than, was it going to be a payroll situation down the, or James Harden to Houston, was going to be a payroll situation down the road? I don't know what it was, but they are still not, in my opinion, the second best team in the NBA. Even though they're older, even though they have to really be cautious with the way they play their players, even though Durant may be the MVP of the league, I think the San Antonio Spurs are the best basketball team coming out of the West. I believe they have size, they have shooting, they have quickness, they have discipline. The only thing that worries me about the Spurs is if they have to go long playoff series and how much that takes out of them. But they are the epitome of what a very well-coached and yet very well-determined by players basketball team is supposed to be. To watch them play is very impressive. But we're talking about the regular season versus the postseason. They have tremendous experience, but do they have the legs for the long series, playoff series? So the shorter the playoff series, better the opportunity for the Spurs. And let's face it, Joe, let's look back 1 year ago. If they keep James, I think it was James, from getting the easy bucket, or was it the three-pointer. They are the NBA champions and not the Miami Heat. So I think the Spurs are the best team. I think I think Oklahoma City is a little bit below them. And when I say a little bit, probably too much for them to overtake the Spurs. Now, a few weeks from now, you may be laughing at me, Jim. You may be all over my case because Oklahoma City takes out the Spurs. But right now, I think it's the Heat and the Spurs as the top picks. But I want it to be the Pacers and Oklahoma City because I love Kevin Durant and I love the Pacers. But you cannot take away how the San Antonio Spurs play basketball. And if you're a young player, watch them. Watch how they play the game. They don't waste the dribble, Joe. They pass the basketball. They skip it. They reverse it. They break defenses down. And they use pass fakes and shot fakes.
Okay, well, that's all the questions we have for this week. I did want to touch on Major League Baseball for a second, just because I, as a Yankee fan, was getting grief when the Astros beat them the first two games of the season, and the Yankees are now in first place, and I wanted to bring that up, Coach.
Well, the Yankees are playing well. Joe, let me ask you a question. I don't follow the scheduling that closely in Major League Baseball. I watch it, and I keep all scores. Why were the Yankees already playing the Cubs in Interleague?
I've noticed that there were a couple other teams that had the interleague games this early, and I did not think they were for a while. So I'm not sure what the reasoning was behind that and why that happened. I'm not sure, it definitely has been in full swing, and I don't know. Don't understand.
Well, for all you Cub fans, I just laugh at you. I talked to a few. I won't say his name, but his nickname is Mac. His last name is Macaluso, and that's all I'll say if you're listening. And for Kurt Gooksell and the gang out there, the Cubs are doing it right. The Cubs are doing it right. They're building it from the bottom up. Let me tell you something. The Cubs are 4-10, and they don't look much better than they were last year or the year before. So I hope that in about a month from now you can come back to me and say, oh, Coach, you know as well as I do, it's a long season. Now look at what the Cubs are doing. I hope we can. But right now, Joe, it looks like to me the best thing about this year and every day that goes by is it gets them closer to next year and they might have a chance to do something next year. Carmelo Anthony pops off. It says the Knicks, of course, I don't think they don't make the playoffs. And Carmelo Anthony says, I want to come back, but I don't know if I could take losing again. Losing again. Carmelo, let me tell you something. Every team you play for struggle in the mirror. Somebody out there who knows Carmelo Anthony, send him a snippet of my comments. Carmelo, you're a great player, a great individual player. You need to become at least a good team player. Stay in the front seat. The analogy I use, stay in the front seat, but let somebody else sit with you. Let a couple other guys come up there. And Phil Jackson has to make the tough call. Folks, Phil Jackson has to say, can we win a championship with Carmelo Anthony? And how many years have gone by, how many teams have gone by where they haven't been able to with a Carmelo Anthony? So do you keep Carmelo? Does Carmelo accept being number two on the team? Do you bring somebody else in and Carmelo accepts not being the main guy? Those are the big questions on winning championships. Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, LeBron James, they figured it out. How do we share it? How do we accept that somebody else may get the number one status? Okay, real quickly, I want to talk. We have about 4 minutes left before we go to some of our interviews. I want to bring up President of the NCAA. He had a lot to say this morning. I thought it was really interesting. One of the points I wanted to bring up was these stipends are paying these players. And he said, first of all, it takes 2 or 3 years to move anything through the NCAA because they have a board it has to get through. Then they have 300-plus member schools that have to vote on it. It has to get a certain percentage of votes to move forward. One of the silliest ones he talked about was what kind of meals student-athletes can have and what is considered a snack. A bagel is considered a snack, and you can give them a bagel. But if you add cream cheese to it, listen to this, Joe, if you add cream cheese to the bagel, it's considered a meal, and you can't do that. So they're voting. They voted a lot of that stuff out, and they think that's all going to pass through, and these kids are going to be able to eat whatever they want to eat. And he used the analogy, if you want to serve them breakfast in bed, you can do that. It was ironic that a lot of this happened after Shabazz Napier made some comments about literally going hungry at times as a student athlete because he was not able to get meals at certain times or certain meals to refuel himself. Now, he also talked about stipends and paying the athletes. I thought this was really interesting. He also talked about the labor situation, and I think we'll be able to talk about that next week. But I want to bring this up before we get into the interviews. He makes a great point, folks. He says, where do you draw the line on the student-athletes? Do you give all the student-athletes $2,000? Or do you give the student-athletes that need that money? For example, he was talking with Mike Golic, and he says, Mike Golic, do we give your kids the same amount we give a kids of parents who are families are in much worse financial shape? I think he makes a good point. Do the kids playing, Joe, and maybe you can step in real quick before we go to the interviews, do you give the multimillionaires' kids the same stipend that you give the kids that absolutely are in dire financial straits from a family standpoint?
That's a good question, but I don't know how you differentiate. I mean, you know, is each student athlete going to have to turn
you
in and
yeah, financial.
I mean, I agree totally if they can do it. I'm for it because, you know, someone like Golic's son doesn't need that much, and maybe that would leave extra for those who are in desperate need of that kind of help, you know? So I don't have a problem with it.
He also talked about 90% goes back to the member schools, and the member schools still don't make money on college athletics. But, Joe, let's do this. For next week, let's try to get Bill Song, former NCAA executive, on compliance on the show, and we'll see if he can talk to some of the points that Mark Emmert made. I thought they were really good. Joe, I know we got to go to interviews. Take us, babe. Take us.
Happy Easter, Coach K. And we'll be going to break, and when we come back, we're going to have Bobby Slick Leonard, followed by at last week's interview with Jeff Rabjohns, which was also great. So, boom, baby, happy Easter, and we'll be back right after this.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Have you ever heard a car ad that looks too good to be true or has fast-talking fine print?
Buy before midnight tonight. Maybe okay, maybe not. You probably aren't eligible for this event. Ubelar's prices are better, but you can't know that.
You want to hear Ubelar's fine print? That's right, silence. Our prices will save you money, huge inventory, even bigger discounts. Ubelar & Son Chevy Cadillac in Jasper, where customers send their friends since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're excited to be back. Our first guest on our first hour segment, he's a treasure in Indiana. And, Coach, I'm not patronizing you here. I really feel that way. I grew up watching you when I was living in Jasper, Indiana. My dad was a high school basketball coach, Ed Schulteis. I met you when you came down to the high school. I can't remember if you were working with the Pacers in the camps or you were working on some sporting goods things, but you were at the high school. My dad was athletic director at the time, and I was a high school kid running around in there, and I got to meet you. Coach Bobby Slick Leonard, welcome to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Okay, Joe. Thank you very much. Thank you. You know, I'm a big, I've always been, I like Jasper, Indiana. And I go down there. I go through Jasper. I made a speech down there several years back. But I go through Jasper because I go down every spring and spend about 3 or 4 days with one of my old players, Don Boosie, over at Holland. And so I go through Jasper and hit Huntingburg, and he lives out there on Old 64.
Don Boosie, the boo-boo, a tremendous defensive player. And let's start right there, Coach. Let's start with Don Boosie because he resonates in the southern part of the state quite a bit. This is Ken Schulteis, Coach K. When I was coaching at Jasper High School, Don Boosie was an assistant coach for the Southridge Raiders, which was a big rivalry. And you, as good as he was as an ABA and MBA player and at the University of Evansville, you could tell that he had such a hand in helping those Southridge teams as an assistant coach develop their game as well. What kind of a player, a mentality did Don Boosie bring to your teams?
Well, he was a great player. He was a great player. I used to put him on the toughest guy. Like if we were playing the Chicago Bulls, I'd put him on Michael Jordan. He always took the tough guy defensively. He really understood the game. He really, Boo really understood the game. And, you know, he was a great guy. He finally, when he came in, when I first got him, he wasn't a threat from three. But by the time he left, they had to guard him out there in that three-point area because he could hit, you know, he was dangerous out there. But I can't say enough good things about Boo Boo. He was a special guy, and he's still special to me today.
You know, Coach, I'm giggling a little bit because I'm just happy to have you on the show, and I know it's, you probably get that from a lot of people. I call you a treasure to the state of Indiana and to hoops. You know, 60 years of your life you spent in basketball, I mean, really involved in basketball. Your family is a basketball family. Your wife was right there by your side, your wife Nancy. I'm going to make this statement, and then maybe we can just talk briefly about it. You know, Indianapolis has become a sports mecca, professionally and collegiately, and great high school sports as well. Indiana, always known as a basketball state, but now kind of that centerpiece. And I know I was reading in your book, Boom Baby, My Basketball Life in Indiana. You were talking about growing up in Terre Haute, and you're talking about Highway 40 and how it was kind of the center of the Midwest. Everybody passed through Terre Haute. But you go on and you establish yourself with the Pacers and Indianapolis. I'm going to make this comment and just get some comments about that time. You and your wife go on WTTV, and you have the Pacer Telethon, and it's basically to save the Indiana Pacers, make sure they stay in Indianapolis. I'm going to say this, July 3rd, somewhere 1977, I believe it was, we're ushering into the NBA. I think that Indianapolis, I know Bill Hudnut and his group did tremendous things, and I'm sure you were a part of that. I think that that is a significant moment in the history of Indianapolis in Indiana sports. Without that telethon, without you and your family humbling itself, TTV making that effort, going on and saying, you know what, we're going to do whatever we can to save these Pacers. We'll have a telethon to go out there. I was a little guy watching in Jasper, Indiana. I sent some money in, $5 I think it was. I think it was significant to where Indianapolis is today as a sports mecca, that you were able to do that, willing to do that, and you kept the Pacers in Indianapolis.
Well, Joe, it would have been a shame. It would have been a shame if we'd lost the franchise. You know, when I first started with the Pacers back in 67, the Indianapolis was a little run down. It was old. It was a little run down. And the Pacers kind of revitalized Indianapolis. And, you know, we went from the Fairgrounds Coliseum and built Market Square Arena. And then, of course, we got the Colts. And had we lost that franchise, I don't know if the Colts would be here today. I don't know. So it was a very important time in the history of the Pacers. And fortunately, we got them. We still got them. And they're playing great. We beat the New York Knicks last night, and we're 20-1 at home. So we're having a good year.
Yeah, and we're going to get to the Pacers in just a few minutes. I do want to mention a few other things, just the amazing life that you have had. And if you're like myself, you just look back at what your life has been and how basketball has been such an important part of it. I know growing up for me, my dad was a high school coach. I grew up around it. I became a coach on the high school level. I've met some great people because of it. I've got to go some places. I've had some tremendous highs in my life and some tremendous lows. But, Coach, I got to believe when you look back, it's probably amazing and such a blessing that a round ball bouncing in the streets and blacktop and concrete and rock and cinder block of Terre Haute, Indiana, has given you the life that you've had for these last 60 years.
Well, if I go back to high school, Terre Haute Gerstmeyer, it's now Terre Haute North. They consolidated over it like they did everywhere. But I had a great high school basketball coach by the name of Howard Sharp, and he is still second or third in the most wins in the history of the state of Indiana. But anyway, he was a protege of Glenn Curtis. And Glenn Curtis coached Johnny Wooden at Martinsville High School. So I had the fundamental background. Had it not been for basketball, I'd never gotten out of Terre Haute. There's no question about that. I grew up Depression and World War II, and had it not been for basketball, I'd probably been at a factory somewhere. But Branch McCracken down at IU, he saw something good in me, and the years we spent at Indiana University were great years. They were great years. Back then, you couldn't play as a freshman, but you had to win the Big Ten championship to get into the NCAA tournament. So our sophomore year, we finished, I don't know, third or something like that in the Big Ten. But the next year, we won it all. We won the Big Ten championship, and we won the national championship. And then my senior year, we won the Big Ten again. But, you know, I've been down around that Assembly Hall, and when I see that 1953 flag hanging up there, it kind of brings back a lot of memories. And we had some kids from Southern Indiana on that 1953 championship team. We had Dick Farley from over at Winslow, Indiana. We had Burke Scott. He was from Tell City. We had Phil Byers, who played high school ball at Evansville Wrights. So we had a Southern Indiana flavor there. So that was really, you know, as I look back, and I tell kids this today, when you look back years down the road, you will say, those 4 years I spent at Indiana University were four of the greatest years of my life. That's where I met my wife. We've almost been married 60 years. That was really fun because you won.
You know, IU's a great place. I graduated from Indiana University. The names that you just mentioned are all people that I'm familiar with from growing up, and my dad being from Evansville originally and then coaching in the area for years and years. You know, Coach, when you look at your life coming out of Terre Haute, you go to IU, you win a national championship in 53. Was the 53 team the best team? Or was one of the other teams in there as good or better and just didn't win a national championship?
Well, we should have won it back-to-back. We should have won it back-to-back. That's one of the big disappointments in my basketball life, because we won it in 53. We started with three juniors and two sophomores. So we had everybody back, plus we had the bench, and we had a strong bench. Had everybody back. We won the Big Ten championship, and we were rated number one in the country the whole year, and Notre Dame upset us in the NCAA regional. And that was on a controversial call, I might add. But, the 1954 team, we should have won it again.
Well, then you go on and you join the professional basketball. And again, I mean, talk about just a guy who's, if you want to put the word winner next to you, and I know you're pretty humble about that, just a down-to-earth guy, everything you've got involved in, you are associated with success, and you are associated with what I call successful people around you, great players. Playing on the pro level, the Minneapolis Lakers. Talk to us about just a few of the guys you played with. They're big names. If you love pro basketball or just love basketball in general, we'll recognize a few of those names. Tell us a little bit about your time on the pro level playing.
Well, I got out of IU, and back in those days, you had to spend a couple of years in the military, which I did. I spent a couple of years in the military, and then when I got out in September of 1956, and the camp with the Minneapolis Lakers training camp was opening about 2 weeks later. So I went right from being in the Army to training camp with the Lakers, and that was an experience. That was an experience. Those years I spent in Minneapolis, snowed all the time, cold. And so when they said, well, we're going to move the franchise to Los Angeles, become the Los Angeles Lakers, everybody on the ball club was tickled to death. But we went to the World Championship Series in 1959 and got beat by the Boston Celtics with Bill Russell and Cousy and Tommy Heinsohn, and that ball club they had just, dominated. They dominated the NBA. And when we moved to Los Angeles in 1960, then I was on a ball club there. We had a good ball club with the Lakers first time out in Los Angeles. We had Elgin Baylor, and Jerry West was a rookie. And when it started out there, the fans in Southern California weren't used to, you know, they didn't know nothing about pro basketball. And they had a counter where it counted the number of people coming in to the arena. And so when they played the national anthem, you could look up there and the American flag was blowing, and you could see how many people were coming into place. And when we first started out, like in the first November, there were probably about 3,500, 4,000. By the time we got to the playoffs, that place was packed. It was packed. And that was the start of the Los Angeles Lakers in Southern California.
Well, you move on and you go in from the pros, and you played with guys like Elgin Baylor, Hot Rod Hundley, you played with George Mikan?
No, George is the guy, though, that gave me the nickname of Slick. And it happened, you mentioned Hot Rod Hundley. We drafted Hot Rod Hundley. Now, when I say Hot Rod Hundley, he was the first of three All-American guards that came out of West Virginia. He was the first one. Jerry West was the second one. And Rod Thorne, who's president of basketball operations in the NBA today, he was the third one. And so I was associated with all of them. But we decided Hot Rod was such a big name in West Virginia at the time, so we said, well, we're going to take a couple of exhibition games in there early in the fall. So we played at Morgantown, where the University of West Virginia is, and then got on a bus, and we're going to play the next night about 130, 40, 50 miles away. And got on that bus, and the guys went to sleep. And we're about halfway there, and there was a sign on the side of the road that said, truck stop 5 miles. So I was sitting with George Mikan, and he was coaching the ball club at the time. And everybody was asleep, but George and I were sitting up in a front seat with the peep lights on in a bus playing Hollywood Gin. And, everybody else was asleep. And George says to me, he said, Bobby, he said, you think we ought to stop at truck stop and let the guys get a cup of coffee sandwich? I said, sure. So we pulled in, and it was a big truck stop up there in the mountains. And we pulled in there, and when the bus driver stopped and turned all the lights on, the guys were waking up and everything, I blitzed George Mikan across the board in that gin game. And he said, how about buying me a cup of coffee? You're too slick for me. And Hot Rod was sitting back there waking up, and he heard him say Slick, and they all started calling me that. So probably the people down in southern Indiana, they probably don't really know who George Mikan was. But George Mikan was the most dominant, the most early on. he was the most dominant center in the NBA. They won four world championships when he was with the Minneapolis Lakers and changed the rules of the game. He was so dominant that they had to widen the lane, and then in a game in Fort Wayne held the ball on him, and the score was 19 to 18. And Danny Biasone, who owns Syracuse Nationals, said, "We can't have that. People are not going to come out and see somebody hold the ball." So that's when they put in 24-second clock. So it changed. George Mikan really changed everything.
Yes, speaking of the shot clock, I know you think that was one of the major changes. I also have heard you say that you think the three-point shot is probably one of the two, along with the shot clock, one of the two most important changes that have been made in pro basketball for sure.
Well, those two changes is the biggest changes that I saw in not only in my pro career. When you stop and think about it, Joe, you know, the American Basketball Association had the 3-point line. Well, when we merged into the NBA, we had a couple guys that weren't too high on the 3-point line, and one of them was Red Auerbach with the Boston Celtics, and then later on he gets Larry Bird and Danny Ainge. They're all shooting threes out there. But anyway, we got the thing through, and you know, I felt like the fans in Denver, San Antonio, Indianapolis, New Jersey Nets. I felt like the fans there, which is the teams that made it merged into the NBA, the ABA teams. I said the fans are no different in the rest of the league than they were in those four cities, and they loved the 3-point line. Well, you know what's happened? It's one of the most popular things. All of a sudden, they're shooting it in high school. They got a college 3-point line. So it's the big thing about it that I've always felt is you go into the last 2 minutes of a ball game. If you got an 8-point lead, let's say you got an 8-point lead last 2 minutes, the fans before that had started getting up and leaving because the team could hold the ball, you know. But with that 3-point line in there, they stayed right to the end. And there's a lot of games have been lost with 2 minutes to play with that 3-point line.
Coach, I agree with you 100%. I know when I started coaching on the high school level in the late 80s, there was no 3-point line. Within a couple years, we had a 3-point line. It changed the high school game. It gave some kids that maybe would not have been on that floor because they couldn't handle the ball as well, or they weren't big enough, but they could shoot it. You know, we had to put them out there, or we had to defend them. And I know I traded 3-point shots for free throws and overcame a 15-point lead. My team did to win a sectional round game down 15 with 2 minutes and 20 seconds left. And nobody left after we hit a couple threes, and we ended up winning that game. So you're spot on that 3-point shot and probably as well on the shot clock. You know, Coach, a lot of people may not remember this, and they should. You take over the Pacers in the ABA, and you lit that franchise on fire. 5 final appearances in the ABA, 3 ABA championships. Again, I'm coming back to being a winner. 3 ABA championships. Jimmy Wild, Mel Daniels, Rick Mount, Roger Brown, guys like that playing for you. 3 championships, 5 final appearances. What a run it was for the Pacers in the ABA.
Well, it was great. I mean, when you look at the whole time, there were 5 years where we went to the championship series. You know, that's a lot of playoff series to get there. But we went to the championship series. We won it 3 times. But there were 3 other years there when we didn't get the championship series, but we did get to the conference finals. So, you know, it was a stretch of And I look back, the best ball club we had was in 73. And that was the front line of Mel Daniels, Roger Brown, who just went in the Hall of Fame, and George McGinnis. And that would be a tough front line for anybody to handle.
Well, of course, George McGinnis was a great high school player in the state, a great player at IU for a short time. And I just remember seeing how strong he was. I can remember watching a game. He went up for a dunk and bent the rim halfway down. And back then, there were no breakaways, and they had to wait to get a new rim and get it on the game. I mean, tell us, George McGinnis had to be, I mean, was he as strong as he looked on TV?
And hey, you know, it's sometimes, today, you look at LeBron James. LeBron James does not pump iron. He does not pump weights. It's just natural. And it's the same way with George McGinnis. Just natural. He never lifted weights or nothing. And he was, you talk about strong. He was strong. In my mind, Joe, and I've seen everything that's come down the pike, George McGinnis is one of the greatest power forwards that ever played the game. And I've told people before, the NBA talked about Karl Malone. I would take George McGinnis over Karl Malone any day. So, you know, he was a great player. And the great thing about it was the New York Knicks in 73 won the NBA championship. They beat the Lakers with Chamberlain and West. So the NBA at that time thought, well, here's a good chance to embarrass the ABA. So we scheduled an exhibition game. But it was all put together. And that was a Nick Ball club with Earl of Pearl Monroe, Walt Frazier, Willis Reed, Dave DeBuscher, Bill Bradley. And they came into Indianapolis. And Bill Bradley, who later became a United States Senator, he got up down at the athletic club and started talking about the Indiana cornfields. Well, it made Roger Brown mad. And Roger that night said, "Slick, let me have him." And Roger tore him up. He tore him up. And at the end of the third quarter, now there's the NBA champions. At the end of the third quarter, we had them down 17. So that's just let people know as we went through the years, how good the ABA got. And we had players like the Iceman at San Antonio, George Gervin, who won the NBA scoring championship a couple times, and Dr. J, Julius Erving, Dan Issel, Artis Gilmore down there at Kentucky. There were a lot of great players in the ABA.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at the all-time top 100 players that they put out a few years ago, there's a lot of former ABA players in that group. Hall of Famers today, and absolutely you should be one of those as well. Let's talk a little bit about the Pacers now, Coach. You know, the thing about the NBA, in my opinion, is the players are so good that if you're not ready to play, I don't care what the record is, if you're not ready to play on that night, you're going to get beat. This Pacer team, under Coach Vogel, their mentality has been pretty solid up to this point, being ready to play on both ends of the court on almost night in and night out, and really have done a great job on that defensive end.
Well, that's their identity. Their identity, when they play their greatest basketball games, their identity is the defensive end of the floor. Well, you've been around coaching, and it's always been the same, Joe. It's always been a game of defense and rebounding. And if you do those two things, on nights where you can't put the ball in the hoop, you can't shoot it in the ocean, those two things, defense and rebounding, will keep you in the game and give you a chance to win.
when you look at the metamorphosis, and I call it a metamorphosis of the Pacers, went through that struggle period where they changed out a lot of players, trying to change the attitude and the makeup of the team, and not just have a team, but a real team, a team on and off the court that Indianapolis, Indiana, and Indiana in general can be proud of in the NBA. There was a struggle there. Finally, Coach Vogel comes in. We get a George Hill. We get Paul George. We get a Hibbert that's growing into being just, he's just such a space eater down in the post. And Paul George is becoming an elite player. What does, in your opinion, as a coach? And we got to have players. We all know that we're better coaches when we have really good players. But what is Frank? What has Coach Vogel brought to the Pacers in your mind as a coach to help move this team up the ladder?
Well, the biggest thing about Frank, is he is an eternal optimist. He's optimistic. You can't get him to say anything negative. He's optimistic. He's optimistic about the players. Even when one or two of them will have bad nights, he goes to that optimism. But, you know, when Larry Bird came back in, and you know, Larry won championships at with the Celtics, and he knew what it took to win. And that's when he, you know, he makes the deal, gets George Hill, gets Paul George. One of the biggest signings he made was David West. David West is somewhat the backbone of this team. But we've got now we've got the bench coming off. Danny Granger's healthy, coming off the bench, and we've got a better bench than we have ever had. So everything, you know, when you're sitting there 31 and 7 in the NBA, you're doing some things right. We got the best record out of 30 ball clubs in the NBA. We got the best record right now.
Absolutely, and Coach, a win over the Knicks, I believe, last night for the Pacers, and of course that has been a great rivalry since the meltdown in the Garden and the miracle. I don't call them miracle shots, just the gamer shots of Reggie Miller. But when you look at this Pacer team, this is a long season. You well know that. You've been through it as a coach, broadcaster, player, whatever. Does this team need to make some moves, add something to the team, in your opinion? Not necessarily a specific player, but a specific position. Do they need to add something to this team in order to make that deep run and maybe get to an NBA Finals?
Well, yes and no. I feel like Joe, that if we had a better backup center, a better backup center for Roy Hibbert, so that when he goes out of the ball game, we can have a guy coming in there that has a low post presence. But I don't know if Larry will make any moves. I don't know if he'll make any moves. This club, the way it stands right now, has a chance with about four or five other ball clubs, has a chance to win the whole ball of wax. We have to wait until May and June to find out really what's going on.
Yeah, the NBA is a long season, and you just got to stay as much physically tough. You got to stay mentally tough, Coach. In your book, Boom Baby: My Basketball Life in Indiana, I want to at least make one more comment about it. As you get into the book, and it's a wonderful book, it just shows how much you love family, how much you love just the life you've had here in Indiana. You said, and your partner in life, 60 years, Nancy's been an inspiration to me and our five children, and you go on to name them. This is in the book. I'm reading from it. Nancy is the first to admit she's a little demanding. Her philosophy, everything you say or do affects somebody else, either good or bad. No gossiping, no lies, don't cheat. Be respectful, give it everything you've got, love everything, and always go to church on Sunday. I love that. Those are wonderful things to live by. And you know what? As much as you're a coach, that sounds like a coach talking to his team.
Well, that's the way she's lived her life. That's the way she's lived her life. She runs the show here, Joe. I don't. She runs the show and always has. Always has. She's been a great mother. But boy, this grandmother thing, I mean, she's out of sight. These grandkids, we got 12 of them. Boy, they think she, you know, they love their grandma. So, you know, it's been good. It's really been good. And, you know, you mentioned New York Knicks game last night. Reggie Miller was in with ESPN to do the game. And, of course, I was with Reggie for 18 years and a lot of boom babies in that time. But I still look back at that one, and you said, well, it's not a miracle. Well, it was a miracle because he scored 8 points in 13 seconds at Madison Square Garden. And it's really probably the way it happened is probably the greatest finish of a game I've ever seen.
Coach, we've got one more question for you before we let you go, and we just really appreciate the time you've given us, and we want to respect it as well. We got one more question. Go ahead.
Okay, Coach, this is Joe. Got a comment from a longtime listener, and he said, you know, it wasn't a question as much as a comment. He said, thanks for the memories from a kid from Elwood that used to sit in the rafters in the Coliseum with my dad and brothers with Hook's discount tickets. Neto, Mel, Roger, Freddie, George, Billy, and the rest of the characters were my life back then. Thank you.
Isn't that terrific? Yeah, that's true.
It certainly isn't, and you're terrific. And we absolutely understand you're just a human being, but you have really stayed true to who you are and your love. And, folks, I really believe, to our listeners, I really believe this. I believe you love not only basketball and your family, but you love Indiana because you have been one of the great ambassadors and made significant contributions that may not ever get up in the state house, may not show up in the history book, but I really believe that the recognition we get in Indiana and Indianapolis has a big part to do with Bobby Slick Leonard and his commitment to Indiana, to Indianapolis, to the Pacers, to the state in general. And I want to thank you for that.
Well, you know, I'm a Hoosier. I'm a Hoosier. And let me close it out and wish everybody down in southern Indiana a great 2014, a great year. Have fun. Have a lot of fun.
Coach, thank you so much, and we appreciate it. And hopefully when we get up to a Pacer game, we can walk by you if you're on the radio and say hi and also gab you back on the show. Give our best to Nancy and the rest of your family. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Jerry Palm with CBS Sports will be on. We'll talk a little bracketology for the NCAA. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. That's IdeaFusionMedia.com.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Toyota in Jasper. You know what happens when you sell a bunch of new Toyotas? You trade for hundreds of great pre-owned cars, trucks, vans, and sport utilities. Many are certified, have factory warranty remaining, fully inspected, and they're all priced to sell. Hurry in for the best selection. Ubelar & Sons Toyota, where customers send their friends for a great pre-owned vehicle since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325.
Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hi, this is Tyler Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
We are ready to go with Jeff Rabjohn. So excited to have Jeff, because I got a couple things I want to talk to him about, and most notably, Indiana basketball, IU basketball. But, Jeff, great to have you on the show today.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the opportunity. Love what you guys do, and love the opportunity to join your show.
Well, the great thing is, Jeff, for our listeners, if they're not following you on Twitter, then they're one of the few that don't. I mean, my gosh, you got Twitter followers out the wazoo, to use the phrase from an old commercial. You really keep people up to date on what's going on on the college level with recruiting, coaches movement, different things that are happening with programs, what you're hearing, what people are speculating on. And I think what's great about social media and Twitter and people like Jeff Rabjohn, you're on it all the time. You're constantly tweeting out information to keep people abreast of what's going on. And sometimes, a lot of times, you're way ahead of the mothership, who's ESPN, who's repeating some of their sports centers over and over, so they're not getting up to date. So kudos for you on that, staying busy with all that. But it's got to be something
you
love.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's got to be something you love to do.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. There's no question at all. To have the opportunity to cover basketball for a living is everything it's cracked up to be. And my family teases me, you know, you ever going to get a real job? My friends tease me, you ever going to get a real job? And I say, come on, I work 7 days a week. How many days a week do you guys work? And they're all like, you cover basketball for a living. Do we really get to call it work? I'm like, yeah, you have a little bit of a point there, but I'm going to call it work. But no, I absolutely love it. I have a ball. I love covering the season when it's going on. You know, last weekend kind of kicked off AAU here in the Midwest. It was a really nice tournament up there in the Milwaukee suburbs, and got a chance to go up there and see Esau Ahmed and Jason Tatum and Quentin Gooden and a number of these higher-level players that Indiana's looking at, as well as some other just kids from different areas. You know, I really enjoy that. I enjoy watching the high school players develop. I love the fact that a lot of times the college schedule will have only one game on a weekend, so I'll get out either on Friday or Saturday to see a high school game. I thoroughly enjoy it. I just absolutely, I do have a ball.
Well, speaking of Indiana University, but Noah Bonnelly's gone.
Right.
He's gotten an agent. You know, with all these things that have gone on, let me just ask you from a perspective of what you hear and what you see. I know that everybody's talking about him. At least they were a couple weeks ago, being somewhere in the top seven picks. With all these guys coming out, with the tournament that Kentucky had, and who's going to end up coming out from there, is there any concern, or are you hearing anything that his stock goes down a little bit, that he gets pushed further back in that first round, or has he just cemented himself in the minds of these NBA talent scouts and organizations about where he needs to go?
What I've heard from NBA scouts themselves, not people on the internet doing mock drafts, but the actual NBA scouts that I know, some from my time covering things for Rivals, some from my days when I was covering the Pacers, they've told me right now, before any workouts, he's slotted between 8 to 12. And that comes from a number of different places. One scout said that their team has actually done their board, which a lot of teams don't really do a hard board this early. They kind of put together what a lot of them refer to as a soft board, which is basically where they think guys are at, but it's more of a range. They might have people at, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or so, but it's really a little bit of a range, unless they've got a guy that they really, really decide, okay, if we have the number one pick, there's no doubt about it, decision made, this is our number one guy. But most teams don't do that because two reasons. Number one, the guys haven't actually gone through the draft combine where they get measured and tested yet, and things can change there. a great example last year. Cody Zeller beat a whole bunch of guards, including teammate Victor Oladipo, in the sprints. No NBA team expected that to happen from a seven-footer. That kicked his stock up. Then you have individual workouts with teams. Well, let's keep Cody Zeller as an example. He showed an awful lot of perimeter skills, hit jumpers. That kicked his stock up again. So until those two things happen, a lot of teams don't really say, well, here's definitely where we've got this person, unless there's a hands-down, no doubt about it, no-brainer, you know, LeBron kind of guy or something like that. So what I've been told from scouts right now is 8 to 12 for Noah Vonleh, but they also said because of his length, you know, he's got the reported 7'4 wingspan, which is what he was actually measured at in one of the high school camps where they do the measuring. I believe that measurement came from the NBA Players Association camp a year ago and was also verified at a LeBron James Skills Academy camp out in Las Vegas. But once they actually get those measurements, scouts think Noah stock could go up. And then if he goes to individual workouts and really can handle it, and those of us who saw him in AAU saw a 6'10" guy handle it pretty well. Not like a guard, but pretty good. His stock could go up a little more. I think the top four are pretty locked in, assuming Jabari Parker does declare. But outside of that, probably 5 through 12 may depend upon what an individual team likes and what decision it makes.
Well, and since he's going to go and probably make a lot of money, and I hope goes on to have a great career, because he definitely has some talent and some ability, and then he's got some physical gifts that, you know, you just can't teach. I don't care how good a coach you are, you can't teach him. But what's Tom Crean and his staff? I know they're beating the trail. I know they're after some guys that are the fifth-year transfer rule. What are you hearing? What's out there? Who are we getting? Who do we have a real shot at? What's just a bunch of nonsense, and what are facts, Jeff?
Well, I don't know if we got enough time to get into all the nonsense. There's always nonsense come April in the recruiting world. The first option that they took a look at, which was a really good one, obviously was Anthony Lee, the 6'9" transfer from Temple. That would have been a terrific option, but he ended up making his first visit to Ohio State, and then he made his decision immediately. So now they're kind of taking a look at other options. There is a 7-footer from Canada that they're going to take a look at, and we'll actually have a little more on him on Pease.com here, if not today, then tomorrow morning. He's a guy who could be a possibility. They're also taking a look at some 2014 forwards around the country. I think one of the key decisions will come here on the 18th. There's a kid named Josh Cunningham, a 6'7", pretty versatile forward out of Chicago Morgan Park. Very good program that's won back-to-back Class 3A titles over in Illinois. Plays very good competition out of Chicago. Cunningham has made a visit to Indiana. He was basically set to announce last week. Then he decided he's going to take his final official visit. Players are allowed a total of 5 official visits. So Cunningham is going to take his final official visit to South Carolina. He's doing that this weekend. Then he's going to come back, sit down with his parents and coaches and make his announcement on the 18th. So that's the first real hard date that we know of a 2014 player who's still on table for Indiana. They did make a big run at a kid named Yonti Maton, who was a 6'5" player out of Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. He was the Gatorade Player of the Year in that state. Indiana got him down on a visit. Then all of a sudden, Michigan State offered. Maton's dream school had always been Michigan State. So there was a big assumption that he was going to Michigan State. 3 days after Michigan State offered, Maton announced he was going to Georgia, which was a little bit of a surprise to a lot of people. So there are players out there that Indiana's still in on. There are much more at this point of the forward variety rather than true post player type variety. The 7-footer out of Canada is, like I said, we'll have a little more on Pease.com either today or tomorrow. It looks like it's a possibility, but when you start talking about foreign kids and things like that, you never know what might crop up. So I think that they are looking. They've looked everywhere from the upper northeast to the fifth-year transfers to out on the west coast. They are really, you talk about turning over every rock looking for a potential big man who could help. That's kind of what Indiana is doing at the moment.
So, Jeff, let me ask you this. For all the Indiana fans, all the IU basketball fans who are whose toenails are toes are curled up and they're clenching their fists with the thought that what happens if IU gets shut out? What if we can't find somebody to bring in, either a post player or the big forward, strong forward position? And, I mean, is this team capable of growing enough, maturing enough from what you've seen? Could we get shut out here in the recruiting wars, at least for an immediate eligible transfer?
Well, the transfer market is always tricky. And certainly a name I don't want to leave out, a seven-footer Trevor Thompson, who just finished his freshman year at Virginia Tech. He initially played at Indianapolis Ben Davis, did a year of prep school before going to Virginia Tech. He has said that he's going to visit Ohio State, Indiana, and Purdue and Butler, at least. But the schedule goes Ohio State first this weekend, then Indiana. So we'll kind of see what happens there. However, unless he gets some unusual waiver, he has to sit out a year as a normal transfer. So while we didn't talk about him earlier, the only reason is barring the unforeseen, he has to sit for a year as a normal transfer, so he won't impact this coming season regardless of where he chooses to go. But he is out there. But more specifically to your question, if there's not a post player who becomes available or who Indiana is able to land, I think then a lot of the question becomes the development of Hunter Perea and Devin Davis. And Perea certainly has the physical ability to play in the post in the Big Ten, but because he kind of learned the game a little later in life, because, you know, he had to sit out his first nine games as a freshman, didn't really get that initial development, you know, he's a little behind the learning curve. Now, can he make it up this spring and summer? I think the honest answer, the straightforward answer is, you know, we'll see. You know, maybe he can make a big jump. And I've seen some people, I think very hopefully, reference in terms of look at what Victor Oladipo did. Yes, that was an unbelievable jump. I think it's a little more difficult for big men to make those kinds of leaps, not impossible. You know, Frank Kaminsky, who just led Wisconsin to the Final Four, averaged 1.8 points and 1.4 rebounds as a freshman, and a whole lot of people in Wisconsin were lamenting, oh, what a wasted scholarship Big Frank is. Well, Big Frank developed. Now, I'm not saying Hunter Perea could be Frank Kaminsky. I'm simply saying that there are periods of time when big men sort of, I don't know if you want to say the light bulb goes on or whatever, and they make a jump. Depending upon what Indiana is or isn't able to get done here in the spring recruiting period, you know, a lot may be on what kind of a jump Hunter Perea can make and what kind of a next step Devin Davis can make. I thought Devin Davis was pretty good in stretches down at the end of the year in the paint, and I think he's certainly worth keeping an eye on. But it may be about Hunter Perea and Devin Davis in the post for Indiana next year.
Yeah, and when I think about that Indiana team, you know, Coach Crean coming from more of a transition ball, dribble penetration type offense is something he enjoys, and maybe that's what this Indiana team ends up being next year even more. My biggest concern is, will they develop enough to be better making decisions? We were terrible at the type of passes we made when we made the passes. And the other thing that concerns me, whether James Blackman Jr. comes in and shoots well or not, is overall, is this team going to improve from the perimeter? If we don't have the capability of getting the ball inside and doing something, we definitely have to hit the shots on the perimeter. We didn't do that very well this year. Jeff, let me jump over to Purdue, the upstate rival in Indiana and part of the Big Ten. Ronnie Johnson, what have you heard on Ronnie? And what is Purdue doing to try to fill some of their gaps that they have, both physically and I think a lot mentally, as far as, I'm not talking about the IQ of the kids, I'm talking about just their basketball IQ. What's Coach trying to do up at Purdue? What are you hearing with Ronnie Johnson and the overall Purdue program as well?
Well, Ronnie Johnson's taking a look around. Has gotten some interest, from the Midwest and some other places. Cincinnati may be the biggest name that I heard that had expressed interest in him. I would say at this point, I'd be a little surprised if that's where he ends up. It wouldn't be totally shocking. He's got some other Midwest interests. He's had some other schools from around the country at least make a phone call to kind of find out a little bit more about him, even going back to his high school days. And sometimes I even get some of those calls when coaches say, want to know, okay, what was he like in high school? What was he like in AU? So there's some interest level there. I think he's going to take his time to make a decision. I think you never know with transfers. Sometimes a school just pops up out of the blue. They talk to a kid one time, and 2 days later, boom, I'm done. That's where I'm going. Kid's made a decision. So I've learned to be careful with assuming these are always going to be calm, thought-out processes. Most of the time they are. I think with Ronnie it probably will be, but we'll kind of see what happens there. As far as Purdue, they have some transfers. They're obviously still recruiting right now. They do have a couple of interesting pieces coming in for next year. I think the biggest decision for them, or the biggest decision being made at Purdue, is A.J. Hammons and whether or not he's going to the NBA. Right now, he's not projected to be a first-round pick. Most have him around 40 to 45, which is the second 10 of the second round. Not a terrible place to be picked. It's only a little bit lower than where Lance Stephenson of Pacers was picked. It's not an ideal situation, though, because that means no guaranteed money. And when teams do not have guaranteed money invested in you, if you don't really bring it, their tendency to cut ties is much higher. As far as Purdue on the court next year, I think the most interesting prospect they have coming in is a kid named Isaac Haas. He's a 7'2", 4-star center out of Alabama. He was originally going to go play in the ACC. Decided that wasn't what he wanted to do. In the span of about 48 hours, he decommitted and then committed to Purdue. He's probably the player you look at and say, he's their best recruit in this upcoming class. They do have several other athletes along the as far as forwards and shooting guards. They've got a 6'7" forward out of Ohio named Vince Edwards. He's only rated as a 3-star kid, and he does need to develop his skills, but he is a reasonable athlete, and he's the kind of guy that if he does develop his skills, you would certainly expect to be a pretty good, maybe by sophomore year, but certainly more like junior and senior year. And then they do have a good passing point guard, or a combination passing scoring point guard coming in P.J. Thompson out of Brebeuf. He's a little bit undersized. They list him at 5'10". If he's 5'10", I'm 6'8". He's a really good player, but he's not 5'10". But he's really good with the ball. He's unbelievably quick, and I think he was a guy that Matt Painter went out and got, mainly because, he's LaSalle Thompson's kid. He grew up around the game. He's one of those kids you look at and go, gosh, I just watched a kid make the right play a very high percentage of the time. Some people look at him and say, well, man, he took a lot of shots in high school. Well, he did as a senior, certainly, and to some degree as a junior, but his high school team needed him to score the ball. So I don't think in any way he was selfish. And when you watch him on an AU team where he's got a little more around him in terms of other scorers, he makes a lot of right plays. Again, he's undersized. That's going to be an issue. They're going to have to deal with that. But his quickness and decision-making is a pretty good level. So that's kind of where Purdue sits right now with what we know they've lost, what they might or might not lose, A.J. Hammons, and what they have coming in with their 2014 class.
Well, my thoughts on Purdue are pretty basic. I do not think in the long term Ronnie Johnson is a big loss because his basketball IQ was just not very good. His decision-making, sometimes his lack of discipline and how he handled his emotions on the court. A.J. Hammonds, what a great potential player he is if he can keep that engine revved up the whole game. But it sounds like at least Purdue's got some options out there, some opportunity. Last thing, you've been so gracious with your time, Jeff. Last thing, John Horford in Michigan, he's leaving. I guess I'm not quite sure I understand the situation. I read a little bit about it, but what, he's a captain of a Big Ten championship team. I know he's graduated. I mean, was it just time to go? Not happy? They got somebody to replace? What's going on with him, with Michigan, and where does he end up?
Yeah, that was a very bizarre one. Yeah, I can't remember, and I haven't read anybody actually write, when's the last time the captain of a Big Ten championship team transferred with 1 year left to play? I thought that was really, really bizarre. I made a few calls, and apparently he believes there's a good likelihood Mitch McGarry comes back, and then he would be on the bench for next year. So since he's a graduate, or will be in May, and he can go play right away, his thought is, I don't want to go from starting to sitting on the bench. My best opportunity to showcase myself for professional opportunities are to go somewhere and play more. So that's what I was told his thinking was. That does not come from him. That comes from a couple of people pretty close to him, though. Apparently he had, you know, no anger toward Michigan or anything like that. It wasn't like there was any sort of big problems. Although a captain transferring at least makes you pause and look at it a little bit. But what I was told was he's concerned about playing time next year, wants to go somewhere he can definitely play, win, showcase himself. I don't think he's likely to get an NBA opportunity. I guess it's possible. When you play in the post, it's always possible. But his best opportunity, as things stand, you know, in April 2014, are probably going to be overseas. So you can understand his desire to do that. But it certainly does speak to, I think, some of the mentality that we see in these transfers. And it's all about showcasing myself for the next level. That was the whole reason Anthony Lee left Temple. He was very open about it. There have been other guys who transferred and been very open about, you know, I need to showcase myself for the next level. And that's a phrase we're starting to hear more and more. And while I certainly understand the dollars that are out there in professional basketball, and they are not to be ignored, it is a little bit concerning in just this whole almost free agency aspect now that we have in college basketball. And I think that mentality, not to wander off on a tangent here, but I think that mentality is a little bit disconcerting for college basketball, for fans, for coaches. It's just really not the mentality that we've seen before with such a true, almost free agent mentality. So many kids, you know, are looking for that.
Yeah, and Jeff, let me kind of continue on with what you just brought up and see how you would answer or feel, at least from my comment. First of all, the great thing about the money in the NBA for college players is the money in the NBA, and the bad thing about the money in the NBA is for college players is the money in the NBA, because as you're talking about the showcasing of the talents, your commitment, maybe putting a cart before the horse. But let me throw this out at you, and believe me, I have nothing against AAU. In fact, I will work with kids that are in AAU and different things like that. But is this showcasing, are we getting into the generation of AAU players who have come up in 6th, 7th, 8th grade, high school, and they're being told, you got to showcase your talents, you got to play on this team, you got to be traveling with this group to be seen? Is this something, you know, kids are like sponges. I don't care. When they're young, they're taking everything in. Are we feeding them in the AAU programs and in the independent programs too much of you need to be here so people will see you? And it's not about the team. It's more about I gotta be seen. People have to know who I am.
That's a really good question, and I think to some degree that there is a part of that mentality that starts, whether you want to say in high school or AAU. I don't know that you could, that it would be fair for us who sit back and observe to point to singularly to AAU, because I've seen guys who have come up, you know, and stayed with one AAU program all the way through. I've also seen kids bounce from one to another, sometimes between April and July. And they always say, well, you know, I needed a better opportunity. You know, I needed to be on the bigger stage. So I think you have a really good point as far as is this mentality being sort of, if not instilled in kids, is it just part of how they view basketball now, that they need to make decisions to put themselves on the best stage, on, you know, however you want to phrase it, to showcase themselves the best. There are kids that I know, there's a number of kids on the West Coast who I've watched over the last 3 or 4 years who have stayed in one AAU program and have gone to multiple high schools. And it's always, well, you know, they play in a better league, or they travel more, or so-and-so plays on a national schedule. And you certainly see it with some of the prep schools, the big prep schools. They openly recruit kids, and not, I don't mean that in any sort of a, they're not doing anything wrong. They're completely allowed to go out and sell their school to basketball prospects, no different than they sell their academics to really high-end math students or science kids or whatever. So I don't mean that word in a negative way specifically. Some people don't like it, but it's I'm not accusing anybody of doing anything wrong. I'm just saying that's part of the deal, that the prep schools go out and they sell their program, and you see kids play at a high school for a couple of years, go to one prep school. There were a couple pretty talented kids who went from different places in the country to some of the really good programs in the Northeast, and before the season even started in October, after school had started in late August, but before basketball season started, they transferred for a second time. So you certainly have to wonder about how much of that mentality does exist today, simply the kind of, you know, I need to showcase myself. And it's hard to look at the transfers you see in high schools among higher-level guys, the movement sometimes you see in the AAU circuit, and then all of a sudden, you know, the transfers you see at the college level. It's hard to look at all that and say there's not this free agent mentality among kids. It's really difficult. On the other hand, sometimes with kids, they get into bad situations. And it's staying would be almost crazy. You know, look at Trevor Thompson. He went to Virginia Tech. A coach got fired. A new coach came in and pretty directly said, you and I aren't going to fit together. You know, you need to go find someplace else. Well, what should happen there? A kid should transfer. Why should he sit there for 3 years and be absolutely miserable playing college basketball? So it is a mix, but the free agent mentality, it is something that I think is starting to become a little more of a concern.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt, and I think we're going to see it more and more in the next few years as these kids that have really grown up with that attitude and being told that. I mean, the kids just didn't make it up. I think they've been told that by adults. Whether the adult at the time thought they were saying the right things, whether they're misguided, whether it's just a sales ploy to get the best players, we could talk. First of all, Jeff, you've got great insight on this. Secondly, I've got feelings about it from being a high school coach and now, you know, dabbling a little bit with some of these AAU players at times. Sure. And I worry about, you know, I see an IU team that had all these YouTube video stars that skill-wise, they weren't there. They weren't there. And Coach Green and his staff, they just struggled in trying to bring them around. Sometimes I think these kids are playing way too many games versus some skill work at the same time. I remember going out to five-star camp for years and seeing them go through 9-10 hours a day of just fundamental work, skill work, fundamental work. Now they don't get a lot of those players anymore because they're off at the AAU tournaments playing games. Last thing before I let you go, Jaquan Lyle was on our show a couple weeks ago. We talked a little bit after he signed with Oregon. Your thoughts on his decision, where he's going, is that a good fit? Is that all going to work out for him?
Well, I wasn't surprised. Oregon was a school that I'd heard, even going back to about a year ago, a lot of people were whispering in my ear, hey, don't ignore Oregon. Hey, don't ignore Oregon. And we started mentioning that on our message board early, and some people, I think some people thought maybe we'd lost our minds completely for mentioning Oregon. But there are certain things you hear in the recruiting world that make more sense based on from whom you hear them. So I understood kind of why. Is it going to fit? Is it a great fit? Is it going to work out? I don't know. I hope for Jaquan's sake it does work out. He's a good kid who's had some mishaps. He's made some mistakes, mistakes that he has made. And I think privately he's really taken responsibility for some mistakes he's made. But, you know, the next person I meet who is perfect as a teenager will be the first person I meet who is perfect as a teenager. So I tend to be pretty forgiving. So I do hope for his sake that it works out. I hope that there are good people around him. I hope that there are good people in his ear when he is off the practice court or not sitting in class. I think those are important things for him. So I hope those things do happen for him. And he certainly has talent. I watched him play this season a number of different times. He wasn't in terrific shape, but he'll need to kind of get that body slimmed back down just a little bit. But I do think he's got the potential to be really, really good. To go back, if we could, on a point you made, I thought you hit on something really good when you mentioned YouTube. I have heard over the past few years college coaches more and more start referring to YouTube players. And when I first heard an assistant coach say that, they were sitting the kid play, and they were like, yeah, he's definitely a YouTube player. And I was like, what are you talking about? What do you mean he's a YouTube player? What's that mean? He looks great on YouTube, but he can't play. And I thought, man, that's pretty accurate on some things. It really is. And I don't say that with any sarcasm at all, but there are players who look terrific on YouTube, but they're just not really ready to play. And I think that's another danger that we have. So many of these kids, I mean, if you watch, as soon as somebody puts up a, quote, mixtape, end quote, of them, oh, man, that they tweet it like, oh, man, I got a mixtape now. I got a mixtape. I get texts from kids, hey, man, I just tweeted out my mixtape. Can you retweet my mixtape? I'm like, yeah, I'll retweet it for you. It's fine. I'm happy to help you out. But it's like, it's almost like you wonder, does that mean they think they can play because they look good on YouTube? Seriously, I'm wondering if they think that being on YouTube and having a really cool mixtape, I almost get the sense they think that has meaning. And
I think they do think it has meaning. I think because when I first came into this YouTube stuff, as far as calling it that, and I really hadn't heard anybody else say it, but as a coach, I said, well, he looks good on YouTube, but he can't play. I got it from my younger kids who would say, Dad, you should see who IU just got. You should see who so-and-so just got. He's really good. I said, how do you know he's really good? You've never seen him play. Oh, I watched his tape on YouTube. So I'd go to YouTube, and I'd see what I used to send out to colleges. When I had kids, I wanted people to look at, send to coaches. Hey, coach, we talked on the phone. Here's this highlight. Yeah, it's a highlight tape. And it's not
right.
It's not showing the bad. It's not showing full games. It's showing highlights. And then if they wanted to do more, we'd actually send more game film, and they could really break it down. But you make a great point, and to me, that's what it is. They're YouTube players, but when they get on the floor and really have to play, they can't play.
Exactly. And I'm not against the highlight tapes. You know, I enjoy – I watch them. You know, when I go out and watch games, we try to video and we try to put up highlights. Now, we try to put up real scouting video as much as possible, which means you're going to see the makes and the misses, the assists and the turnovers. We're going to give you a real look at a player. And the thought behind that is, if I was writing a story about a kid and say he scored 22 points, but say he shot 7 for 28 from the field, I would report that he scored 28 points and that he shot 7 for 28 from the field. I would tell you the truth. So why shouldn't we do everything we can to be truthful in video just as we would in the written word? Now, do you have time to do that after every game? No, that's not humanly possible. There's only 7 days in a week. But when at all possible, we do try to put up real scouting video so people can see. And I think that's one of the reasons that the Pigs.com members really like the video that we put up, because some of them had never seen James Blackman play, and they assumed that he could do absolutely everything on the court unbelievably well. Well, he's a five-star talent and deserves it. And he is, in the eyes of many, not just me, but many McDonald's All-American voters, he was the best shooter in the 2014 class. I think that's probably quite true. A couple kids are right there next to him, but he's in that conversation. But does he need to work on his ball handling, especially as far as trying to run a play to maybe set something up for a teammate? Yeah, that's an area he's got to work on. His lateral movement defensively and keeping someone in front of him who is quick with a dribble, is that an area where he needs work? Yeah, it is. And so, you know, I think we've done a good job of giving people a little more of an honest look at a player. Just, you know, here's how he plays. Here's the makes, the misses, the assists, the turnovers, the steals, you know, everything. And I think, you know, that whole YouTube idea, it's nice in theory because it's a way to disseminate highlights of any player to any coach around the country. That's terrific. But the idea that some of these kids think this stuff has meaning, that's concerning.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Jeff. There's a difference between what you're doing and other organizations like you. You're putting up videos that give the highlights of what this guy's capable, what he brings to the table. I don't have any. You have to do that to get people interested, to understand what the potential of this player is. But when I think of YouTube now, and I think this is what you're alluding to, we're talking about a social media, a 14-year-old kid that all of a sudden has 10,000 views, not necessarily from college coaches or legitimate scouting groups. There's just kids all over the country that are seeing this. He's a YouTube star on the basketball court from a highlight video, and he may not be able to dribble at all or do anything like that. But we can, hey, folks, listen, the bottom line is, follow Jeff Rabjohns on Twitter and get to Pigs.com and Mike Begram and Jeff and follow their information. You're going to find out who's out there and who has the ability to move up and play on the next level. But, Jeff, I really appreciate you being on it. I really appreciate you being open and honest about how you're viewing players and viewing things because, you know, we don't want fluff. We want to talk the real deal, and that's why we love having you on.
Hey, it's absolutely my pleasure. Absolutely my pleasure. You guys have a great show, and I love talking basketball with you. I really do. So hit me up anytime, and, you know, if you just even if you're not on the air and you just want to talk hoop, I love talking to coaches. So it's truly my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Once again, thank Jeff for being on. Folks, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to just pull some headlines and talk a little bit about what's left out there in sports before you head into your weekend. Great show so far, folks. I mean, a great show. Just talking to these guys and getting the truth. And if you're a Purdue fan, an IU fan, a Michigan fan, you know, this John Horford thing is just weird. And I loved how Jeff looked at that. It's all about showcasing now. Even if you really don't have a shot, you still want to showcase. And I think he could have stayed at Michigan, been the sixth man, maybe got to the Final Four, and he can still go overseas and have a great career, even as much as he will. But he'll be a good player for somebody somewhere. Be interesting to see where he lands up. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Joe and I will talk. We'll finish things out if there's any questions. Great show so far. Stay with us. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? We'll team up with the Coach K and Joe Show and form a winning marketing team, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you.
And that'll do it for this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. On behalf of Coach K, this is Joe Milligan saying, have a happy Easter, and we'll see you next week.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by
Idea Fusion Media, Ubelar and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today.
See you next week.